for the past year, the central Republican accusation in this investigation.
We're adjourned. Close it down.
Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings had his microphone cut off in mid-sentence by a Republican committee chairman in Washington. It happened at the end of a contentious hearing on the Internal Revenue Service. The Congressional Black Caucus has called for the committee chairman's resignation. The chairman has apologized to Cummings, but the moment of political kabuki highlights the deep divisions in a Congress that has become increasingly polarized and less able to pass legislation. We'll talk about that story and others this hour with political analyst Barry Raskovar. It's the Midday Weekly Review after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday Friday and the Weekly Review. Dan Roderick's here. A change in our usual format today. We'd like to open the phone lines for listeners to comment on three questions. Number one, if you're a Maryland Democrat and the state primary were held tomorrow, which gubernatorial candidate would get your vote? Anthony Brown, Heather Mazier, or Douglas Gantzler? We understand there are a lot of undecided voters, especially on the Democratic side, probably on both sides. So this might be hard for a lot of people to make that call today. But if you're among the undecided, have you changed your mind in the last few weeks, the last couple of months? Were you leaning toward Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown before the revelations about the costly problems with Maryland's health insurance exchange? Give us a call with an answer to that question, 410-662-8780, or send us an email with your reflections and comments about that, midday@wypr.org. Question number two today, do you agree with the U.S. Senate that senior military commanders should maintain authority to prosecute rapes and other serious offenses that occur within their ranks? The Senate voted yesterday 55-45, to block a bill that would have stripped commanders of that authority. It's something we've talked about here on the Midday Show. It would have taken sexual assault cases out of the chain of command and placed it generally under civilian review. So give us a call if you have an opinion about that vote yesterday in the Senate, 410-662-8780. And our third question today, do you agree with the Congressional Black Caucus that Darrell Issa, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, should lose his chairmanship for the way he handled a hearing the other day, cutting off the microphone of Maryland Democrat Elijah Cummings? Please join us for these discussions today. The phone lines are open. You can send us an email to midday@wypr.org. We welcome Barry Raskovar, former Baltimore Sun writer, editor, longtime political analyst, contributor to WYPR, and now blogging at politicalmaryland.com. Barry, nice to see you.
Hey, Dan, it's always a pleasure.
Let's start with the Issa Cummings kabuki that I call it, this little bit of political theater the other day, this exchange from Wednesday morning. So let me set this up. Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings had his microphone cut off in mid-sentence by Darrell Issa, who is the California Republican who serves as chairman of the House Government Oversight Committee. And Representative Cummings is the committee's ranking member. That means he's the senior member of the committee from the minority party.
Right.
And this happened at the end of a contentious hearing. Well, it wasn't much of a hearing, actually. A contentious investigation into the Internal Revenue Service's review of the tax status of Tea Party-affiliated groups. Lois Lerner, who's been there before, the former head of the IRS's Cincinnati office.
Well, the tax-exempt division.
The tax-exempt division of the IRS.
Right. She's the one who has to determine what groups are legitimately tax-exempt.
Right. Okay. So the Cincinnati office was responsible for reviewing the tax-exempt status of political organizations. And she'd been called to testify before. She was called to testify again. As she had done previously, Lois Lerner asserted her Fifth Amendment right to refuse to answer questions. Darrell Issa moved quickly to adjourn the meeting before any Democratic member of the committee had a chance to speak. So that's the setup. And here's what happened when Elijah Cummings tried to slow things down and speak.
Mr. Chairman, I have a statement. I have a procedural question, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a procedural question. Mr. Chairman, you cannot run a committee like this. You just cannot do this. We're better than that as a country. We're better than that as a committee. I have asked for a few minutes to ask.
Now you're turning me off.
ask my question. May I state my statement?
You're all free to leave. We've adjourned, but the gentleman may ask his question.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I have one procedural question, and it goes to trying to help you get the information, by the way, that you just asked.
What is your question?
Let me say what I have to say. I've listened to you for the last 15 or 20 minutes. Let me say what I have to say. Chairman, I have one procedural question.
Ms. Lerner, you're released. You may.
But first, I would like to use my time to make some brief points. For the past year, the central Republican accusation in this investigation.
We're adjourned. Close it down.
Political collusion directed by or on behalf of the White House. Before our single document.
Thank you.
Or interview one witness, Chairman Eichler, on national television, and said that this was the targeting of the president's political enemies effectively and lied about it during the election year. End of quote. He continued this theme on Sunday. But if you will sit down and allow me to ask the question, I am a member of the Congress of the United States of America. I am tired of this.
Well,
we have members over here, each who represent 700,000 people. You cannot just have a one-sided investigation. There is absolutely something wrong with that, and it is absolutely un-American.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Somebody said hear, hear. Yeah, I was in my car the other day. I tuned into C-SPAN, as I do from time to time. Right in the middle of this, just as it was starting. And I said, wait a minute, that's Elijah Cummings. I didn't even know, what hearing was being broadcast by C-SPAN. But I was kind of shocked by what was going on there, having his mic turned off and still hearing the congressman speak. Now, and then right afterwards, Daryl Issa, the reporters gathered around him outside the committee room to ask him why he shut off Elijah Cummings' mic, not once but twice. Let's listen to that.
He was not directing questions toward the witness, and the committee had already adjourned.
But why did you adjourn, returning to your colleague and asking him?
Pursuant to the committee, we recessed only to determine whether or not we could get her to give testimony. Once it was determined she could not give testimony, there was no question before us. Mr. Cummings did not raise a point of privilege or a point of order, and in fact, I did recognize him when he said he had a question. He went into an opening statement. Opening statements had already been completed. There were 40 members sitting at the dais, and we had already adjourned. Therefore, I left because there was no question pending.
Why would you say shut it down?
Because he was talking into a mic in an adjourned meeting. The fact is, Mr. Cummings came to make a point of his objections to the process we've been going through. He was actually slandering me at the moment that the mics did go off by claiming that this had not been a real investigation.
That was Congressman Daryl Issa. The Congressional Black Caucus has called for his resignation as chairman of that committee. Barry, let's go to you on this.
Yeah, well, all too often the term disrespectful is used and is overused. But in this case, I think it's quite appropriate. Members of Congress, ordinarily members of all legislatures in this country, will give the opposition party the right to speak. They're very polite about it. The rules of order are followed. But in this case, Daryl Issa, who is one of the Republican Party's hitmen, really, decided just to abandon all the rules of courtesy. And the video is even more shocking than the audio.
Yeah, because he waves his hand a certain way. I made a comment this morning that on Twitter that the way Issa is using the cutoff sign, the hand to the throat, I think NFL players get fined for doing that now. it certainly didn't look good. It certainly did look disrespectful. Well, what's the background here, though?
Well, the background is that this is the committee that the Republicans in the House are using to try to find dirt on the Obama administration and to drag the administration through the mud wherever possible.
And for as long as possible.
Right. Issa has tried this in the past on numerous occasions. Fortunately for the Democrats, this guy keeps shooting himself in the foot, as he did again this past week. You know, he's a bit of an embarrassment, but, you know, John Boehner keeps him around because he does draw headlines with these wild accusations he makes. His investigations usually lead nowhere. The IRS investigation has cost $14 million, and what the Government Accountability Office discovered was that there was no political vendetta involved. They were being very zealous about looking at all sorts of groups that were claiming tax-exempt status.
Including some on the Democrat-liberal side.
Yes, including some Al-Qaeda groups. So that it wasn't this highly politicized operation that ISO is still trying to make it appear to be.
So Lois Lerner chose not to testify. This is the second time for her.
Right. She did it last May. She did the same thing.
Asserting the Fifth Amendment. So ISO knew what was going to happen. So this was a bit of a show. But actually, if he had set it up as a show, right, to show that they were being stonewalled again, it certainly backfired on him.
Well, the odd thing is that this is not the first time that Elijah Cummings has butted heads with Daryl Issa. That is Elijah Cummings' job. He sees himself as the Democratic leader on this committee who tries to rebut what Issa is putting forward. And he asked a procedural question, and he said he had a statement to make. Usually, politeness in the Congress would allow such a thing to take place
right.
without any discussion.
And if it's relevant to the witness who's there, even if the witness is giving the fifth, you usually don't ask the witness to leave or tell the witness they're excused.
No,
if the ranking member wants to say something.
No, if you look at the video, what you see is Issa appears to be a deer caught in headlights. He stands up, he looks at Cummings, who continues to object and to talk, and he doesn't know whether to leave or stay. He starts to leave two or three times, then comes back, and then starts to sit down, then stands up. He doesn't know what to do with this person who is objecting. What he should have done was to allow Elijah Cummings to have his say,
right?
Because that's the way we work in this country.
Let's hear from Irma on this. Barry Raskovar, our guest in this hour of midday. Irma, go right ahead. What's your thought about this? What happened?
Well, I saw Daryl Issa's treatment of Elijah Cummings on the TV last evening, and I was so upset because it seems like our civil discourse is going to wreck and ruin. I'm in my 80s, and I've been watching our what's going on in our government and so on for a long time, but I saw such disrespect, such overbearing on the part of Daryl Issa. What kind of example are we giving to our children? And the kind of the names that we, and things we say about our president, it's not as if they have a rational argument to support what they're saying. They're simply being mean.
Thank you very much for phoning in those comments.
I think she's very accurate. It's one of the problems we're seeing is a decline of civility in legislative groups.
Barry Raskovar is with us for the hour. We have a couple other questions that we'll get to. One is, do you think Daryl Issa should resign or step down as chairman of that committee? That's not going to happen, but you're welcome to call in with your thoughts and reflections on what happened in that exchange between Daryl Issa and our Maryland congressman, Elijah Cummings. Also, the Senate vote yesterday on military commanders and sexual assault in the military ranks. We want to get to that. We'll get to the phone lines in just a minute. And we'll also talk about the gubernatorial campaign here in Maryland and asking that question, has anything that's happened in the last couple of months pushed you one way or the other toward a particular Democratic candidate or Republican candidate? Open phone lines in this hour of midday, the Weekly Review with Dan Rodericks here and Barry Raskovar. And welcome back to Midday, Midday Friday, the Weekly Review. Dan Rodericks here with political analyst Barry Raskovar, who blogs now at Political Maryland. You can find a link to Barry's blog on the Dan Rodericks Facebook page. So we talked about Daryl Issa and Elijah Cummings. We can talk some more about that. We want to talk about Kirsten Gillibrand's sexual assault bill being derailed in the Senate yesterday. And then we'll talk about the gubernatorial campaign here in Maryland, Barry. Let's take one more call on the Issa Cummings confrontation. Matthew in Catonsville, your comments on that are welcome. Hi,
Hi Dan. Hi. I think this whole latest incident between Darice and Representative Cummings, who actually is my representative, and I'm very proud of the job he's doing, is just one more, you know, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. I think the most shameful thing to come out of Darrell Issa's running of the committee was the cherry-picking of the transcripts that he released to the media regarding the interviews he's done with the IRS employees. When Representative Cummings finally had the full transcripts released over the objections of Mr. Issa, they actually showed the exact opposite of what Mr. Issa said they showed. And so I find that kind of behavior just nothing more than just political thuggery, really.
Yeah.
It's really despicable. And for that reason, I think he needs to resign.
All right. Matthew, thank you very much. Patricia's comment on this. Patricia writing to us from Baltimore by email. She says, Mr. Cummings has never been treated with respect on that committee. He has shown the patience of a Jackie Robinson. 410-662-8780 is our number to join us here. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org.
Yeah, well I think, Dan, that what you're seeing is just part of a much larger story, a very sad story, in which the Republican Party is doing everything in its power to make sure that the Democrats and the president fail and are made to look like the evil villains of society. And, you know, you see it time and time again.
Is it not where serving them? Is it not serving them, Barry? We have a midterm election coming up, 2014.
Well, we'll find out. But I think it has served them. A negative politics does seem to move the needle.
This other topic, Kirsten Gillibrand's sexual assault bill, which she wanted to strip military commanders of their authority over sexual assault cases. Of course, there have been many sexual assault cases in the military and lots of questions raised about how the cases are handled, calls for reforms. This one went nowhere yesterday, but this vote is interesting. This is a 55-45 vote in the Senate in which some Democrats split from Gillibrand on this, and some Republicans joined her.
Yeah, well, the odd thing here, and this ties into our prior conversation about Darrell Issa, is that she had 55 votes. You would think ordinarily with 100 senators, 55 is a majority.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
However, it's not, because Republicans insist that the Democrats corral 60 votes in order to prevent a filibuster.
Right.
Again, this flows back into the overall game plan of the Republicans, is to gum up the works wherever possible. Any progressive legislation, they want to stall it or kill it, and they want to make sure that nothing positive happens while Obama is president, so that they can go into the midterm election and say, look at this guy, he's a failure. Well, he's a failure in legislation because the Republican House won't move anything. And Republicans in the Senate use the filibuster rule to try to block whatever they can.
This bill would have removed the chain of command from prosecuting sexual assaults and other major military crimes. So it's not just sexual assaults. We just discussed this on Midday. That's why I brought it up again today. We were talking about the case out of Annapolis involving some midshipmen and the role of the naval commander there of the Naval Academy in that. And I questioned, and other people questioned, why this is still part of the military structure. Why isn't criminal? Why aren't criminal cases taken out of it and handled in the civilian courts? Let's hear some comment on this. Terry in Rockville, thank you for calling. You're on Midday.
Hi, such a pleasure to be on. I am a WYPR member, and I appreciate you guys every day. I'm a progressive, and I certainly think that there's a problem that needs to be addressed, but I'm calling to speak and say that this bill was not the correct response. I'm a veteran. I'm a former Marine sergeant, and I would tell you that I think what we need to look at is the nature of the military. The nature of the military is such that it is not in any way similar to civilian justice. This needs to be addressed via the Inspector General, which has sort of super judicial power within the military already. And so it needs to be organized in that way. A commander is ultimately responsible. So when we think about responsibility, like, Dan, you're responsible for the product that your show puts out.
Mm-hmm.
But people would understand if something happened when you couldn't control it. Well, guess what? In the military, that's not really a response. I mean, this is a whole other show. I would suggest to try and get Tom Ricks on to talk about the deteriorating sense of responsibility in the U.S. military.
Oh, we've had him on, Tom Ricks.
Yeah, no, yeah. I've listened to him on there, but, I mean, just to get him back on to talk, just do the generals again, because it's such an amazing deterioration of discipline in the services that aren't the Marine Corps that it just makes me sick. But at the same time, that doesn't mean we can abandon the fact that these are military units. Their job is to locate, close with, and destroy the enemy. The enemy is the U.S. Constitution. This is not a business or something else like that. This requires an absolute commander, because the commander is absolutely responsible not only for the mission but for the lives of the people under his or her control.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question.
I want to ask you a question, though.
Process this for me a little bit, will you, and for our listeners. If someone in your command, say you're a commander, commits a sexual assault either against someone else in the ranks or outside of the ranks, you know, on civilian territory, not on a military base, why is that case handled by the military?
I'm not entirely sure that what you're saying is correct, Ben. It was my experience when this happened, particularly I was overseas, it happened, and then I was in Italy, and that person was handled by, and he's in an Italian jail to this day, as far as I know. And while I was stationed at Camp Lejeune, we regularly saw Marines brought in front of civilian justice. You aren't a super citizen.
Well, I mentioned the Annapolis case because, you know, we had a couple midshipmen who were alleged to have committed a crime in Annapolis somewhere, not on the Naval Academy grounds, mm-hmm. and that's been handled completely by the military system. So,
well, I'm not saying there's not a problem, and these things aren't covered up, and that commanders aren't really the problem. The good old boy network is the problem, but the way to address it isn't the bill that was put forward. That is my point. You cannot strip military commanders of that level of control. What you can do is share that level of control with the Inspector General's office. The Inspector General's office exists in every single military command, and it already has the power to override commanders in many instances. And you can just articulate that further and give them further resources in order to provide this sort of method by which people seeking justice will have further rights and further control.
Terry, thank you very much.
One point that Terry raises, which is interesting to me, is that you had dueling bills, reform bills, in the Senate, one by Claire McCaskill, who is very much aligned with what Terry was saying, that you have to reform the system. You don't have to tear it apart. Gillibrand's bill was really a radical change. And I think that is what had a lot of Democrats who understand the way the military functions and the complexity of situations like this, why they abandoned Gillibrand, including McCaskill, mm-hmm. in this regard.
And the President of the United States.
Yeah.
The President of the United States did not throw any support to a Gillibrand in this, and she actually complained about it.
Yes.
He has said that he wants to reform this problem in the military.
Well, I think more than anything, these bills have highlighted the weaknesses within the system. How we address them is now what we're arguing about.
I get you. Mike in Annapolis with his comments on this. Thanks for joining us on Midday.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on. I retired as a commander, and I also served as an NCIS agent. And I investigated a handful of sexual assault cases. In one case, I was the key witness that got an assailant put in jail. That said, most of the cases that I've seen are he said, she said, or there's a lack of evidence, or alcohol on both sides is involved, to where you're taking the side of one drunk over the side of another drunk. In short, they're the type of cases that if you took it out of the military chain of command and put it in a civilian court, they would never pass muster in a civilian court because the rules of evidence apply and it wouldn't work. In the military system, the court-martial system does work in the way that with the rules of evidence, but there's also Article 32 and Article 15, which allows the commander to then administratively separate somebody based on his own opinion, a preponderance of evidence. And so if you want to take these cases completely out of military jurisdiction, you can do that. You won't get a better result, and they won't be able to administratively take a second bite at the apple where they think that a crime has occurred, but the rules of evidence didn't substantiate it.
Mike, thank you very much for that input. Appreciate it. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here if you want to contribute to our conversation this hour on that subject or the one we touched on earlier, Daryl Issa and Elijah Cummings. And then after this next little break here, Barry and I are going to talk about the gubernatorial campaign in Maryland. Certainly is interesting. We'd like to know if any of you have changed your opinions about who you're going to vote for in either primary, Democratic or Republican, especially looking on the Democratic side where polls show there are so many undecided voters. 410-662-8780 is our number here. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to Midday. Carlos, calling from Fort Meade, wants to clarify something for us. Carlos, thanks for calling. Carlos, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, we have a bad connection. What did you want to say, Carlos?
So I wanted to clarify on your point about why we even have the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And when you look at the origins of that system, it goes back 60 years. There's two reasons for the system to be in place. One is the military nature of some of the offenses that we have in the system that have no comparison to the civilian side. The other one is a question of jurisdiction. If a sexual assault happens in Iraq, there's no state or federal court that has jurisdiction over that crime. So those are just two of the reasons why we have the system.
Okay, thank you very much, Carlos. I wanted to read a couple of emails before we moved on to the gubernatorial campaign. This goes back to the Daryl Issa, Elijah Cummings exchange the other day. This is from Ann in Baltimore. Mr. Issa described Mr. Cummings' statement as slandering. Slander is not defined as making a declarative statement about something a person has clearly and publicly done. Just because Mr. Cummings said, the Republicans have continuously, or I'm sick of this, does not make the statement slanderous or libelous. They may be subjective observations, but that isn't prohibited conduct in Congress. Thank you, Ann. It seems quite evident that what Mr. Issa could not stand was to have a member of the committee present documented findings from objective bodies that the IRS policies on reviewing tax-exempt organizations was not targeted to conservative or Tea Party groups only, and he has a temper, and not what I would describe as statesmanlike or respectful to anyone who doesn't agree with him. Thank you for that comment. So, Barry, let's talk about the gubernatorial campaign in Maryland. I asked this question. If Maryland Democrats want to engage this question during this hour of the show, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. If the state primary were held tomorrow, which gubernatorial candidate would get your vote? Specific question to Democrats, Anthony Brown, Heather Mazier, or Douglas Gansler. And if you're among the undecided, have you changed your mind in the last few weeks? And specifically, were you leaning toward Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown? Because he's said to be the front runner. He is the Lieutenant Governor. Before the revelations about the costly problems with Maryland's health insurance exchange. Barry Raskevar had a terrific blog on this this week, column on it earlier
this week. I would advise anyone who is looking to make up their minds that before you jump in the water, it's awfully cold out there right now. Wait till the water warms up a little bit. Wait till the primary election campaign warms up. We really don't know any of these candidates very well. We know very little about where they stand on a host of issues. We need to hear from them much more directly. The campaign really won't start until the legislature goes home in early April, and journalists start focusing directly on the candidates and not on the legislative votes in Annapolis. Because at the moment, Anthony Brown is a mystery to most voters. Doug Gansler, he's been Attorney General for a long time, but we don't know him that well. And Heather Mizura has been a delegate from Montgomery County that people outside of Montgomery really don't know at all. So we've got a long, long way to go in this election. The first ads just went on TV this week. They're very interesting in themselves. I can understand why people say I'm undecided.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I can too. I do wonder about that question about Anthony Brown. Now, he's lieutenant governor, so you would say, well, he has an edge because he's a lieutenant governor, although the history doesn't show governors benefit
the reverse
from that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He has the edge in fundraising.
So, somewhat. He has $7 million and Gansler has $6
million. Okay, that's closer than I thought.
So both of them are going to be able to advertise a heck of a lot. Heather Mizura is a very long shot, but she may steal votes from one or the other candidate, and that may determine the election. It could be very interesting. Anthony Brown remains pretty much an unknown candidate. His first ad tells you very little about him other than he served in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
He had a interesting background as far as his parents are concerned. But other than that, it says nothing about what he'd do as governor or what he believes in on controversial issues.
If you were to take a survey today, Barry, do you think most Marylanders would say Maryland Health Insurance Exchange not good, not working out great? Most people understand that it's been bungled and that there are costly problems associated with it here in March.
I don't think most people understand the cost involved because it hasn't affected them directly.
But they have a general idea that there's something
wrong
there. That
been bungled, and maybe Anthony Brown had a role in it.
That part, I want to go to that part. Now, how many people associate that? What percentage would you say? We'd be guessing, speculating here. But I wonder, do people associate it with Anthony Brown? I mean, it's been pinned on him in the press. It was pinned on him by the governor of Maryland, who made him the point man for the rollout of Obamacare in Maryland.
Well, I think more important is that it will be pinned on him by Doug Gansler throughout April and May as we approach the June 24th primary. He's not going to be able to run away from it. What's curious is that with the hearings we've had in Annapolis on how we're going to fix what's broken, Anthony Brown is nowhere to be found. He's not there.
It's so, Dr. Sharfstein pretty much answering the question.
Josh Sharfstein is taking all the arrows and is doing the bleeding, but the governor's point man is just not there. And the question is, will we ever hear from him on this issue?
And can you speak to the cost a little bit?
The cost, we don't know exactly what the cost is, even when nonpartisan legislative services analyst was asked about this. He hedged because it's not really clear what the ultimate cost will be, but it's pretty clear this will be the most expensive screw-up in state history.
And most of it is federal money given to the state to get this thing launched.
Correct. However, the federal money is supposed to run out at the end of this year as far as setting up the computer system. And if Maryland, if we learn in the next few weeks that Maryland has to go to a completely new software system, this could end up costing tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars more, and the state could be left holding the bag.
Republicans continue to call for abandoning the Maryland system, the website, and moving everybody into the federal system.
Well, John Delaney also,
Congressman,
is calling for that. I'm not sure that's a good idea. Unfortunately, we have the system that we have. And right now they're trying to make it work. And it may be that in order not to screw things up the next time we have an enrollment period in November, that we have to work within the existing parameters and try to modify the system we have now and maybe on a parallel track start to go in a different direction, but that may be a year and a half, 2 years down the road. Very complicated question. There are no easy answers. But what concerns me is that no one in Annapolis seems at all worried about accountability.
Well, you made this point a couple of times in your piece the other day on Political Maryland that what's going on? Senators, delegates, you're not asking questions. And then I sent you an email. I said, well, wait a minute, I thought they're having some oversight here. But the oversight is on the fix.
Correct.
Right? The oversight is not on, the questions are not being asked really about how this was a mess up to begin with.
No, right? And one of the prime reasons is that most of the Democratic leaders in Annapolis have endorsed Anthony Brown.
Right.
And if they start digging into this right away, it's entirely possible that Anthony Brown's name's going to come up on numerous occasions and not in a positive way. So when Republicans say you're trying to cover this up, they have an argument here.
Because it's been put off until after the legislature.
Or maybe never.
Maybe later.
We may never get the type of answers that we got from the Preston report on the savings and loan scandal that cost the state $175 million, which now looks like chump change next to this one.
Wow, that goes back a way. You have a great memory, Barry. I remember the Preston report.
Yeah.
Who was the Preston in the Preston report?
Wilbur Preston.
Wilbur Preston.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes. Who was a prestigious lawyer.
Attorney, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Baltimore. And he put out a 600-page report that just analyzed how we got into this situation, who was at fault, even analyzed whether or not the Baltimore Sun papers had created the run on the savings and loan institutions by publishing the stories about what was going on at Old Court savings,
yes,
and loan.
And that was an independent investigation.
Yes.
And the legislature called for it, or
yes,
the governor?
The legislature and the governor jointly called for it. A law was passed creating this special counsel to the governor.
Could someone do that other than the governor in Maryland?
No.
No,
that's the problem.
The governor is not going to call in an investigation.
Well,
of his own administration.
Here's the thing, Dan. David Brinkley, who is the minority leader in the Senate from Frederick County, wrote a letter to Doug Gansler saying, why aren't you investigating this? This needs an investigation. We need to get to the bottom of this. Well, Brinkley was right. We do need to get to the bottom of it. Well, the other day, Gansler sent a letter back, and it's part politics and part that I'm the attorney general in the response. But what he said is that, unfortunately, he doesn't have the authority on his own to investigate this mess. Hmm. Usually the governor has to tell or request the attorney general to make an investigation.
What about the state prosecutor?
State prosecutor doesn't have a role in it either. It's not an election issue.
Here's an email on this subject from Frank in Carroll County. He said, I've been leaning towards Anthony Brown until the whole debacle with the Maryland Health Exchange. That he allowed such a travesty to be inflicted on the people of Maryland shows that he is totally unqualified to be governor. In my book, he has never explained what happened, how he was involved, or what his input in the exchange creation was. Instead, he appears to be avoiding any responsibility that he might have in the exchange.
Well, Anthony Brown has testified initially before the legislature, and he did somewhat accept responsibility. He said, I'm responsible. I was put in charge of passing the legislation.